doctor, is your tea ready? Do you have tea? It's coming. I think we can check in. Just have 5 minutes while we will be starting our meeting within 5 minutes' time. My apology for that. We planned that it would. My apology. We again starting my meeting. Our meeting late at this time. After time that was secured, we are late with 10 minutes. Can I please be permitted that we open our meeting officially? I don't want to disregard or segregate our beliefs as South Africans. I know that in South Africa we have a mix of beliefs and religion. Can we therefore start our meeting with a moment of silent prayer, please? Thank you. Honourable members, I think must first welcome all our honourable members in the meeting and welcome the minister with his delegation. I think the first thing that we'll usually do is our norm that when we start our meetings, although sometimes we may know each other, but sometimes it is very official that we introduce each other so that we know who is in the meeting and be free to be, you know, engaging each other, knowing each other with our capacities as delegated in this meeting. My name is Moses Titus Mhlanga, permanent delegate from Mpumalanga and acting chairperson of this committee. I will allow the honourable members to follow the suit, and then the minister will then introduce his entourage. Thank you.
Ke re pabo dilas tulo ke ga le reko manopole le lokola komite jo go kapa bokone.
Good morning, my name is Morgan Chetty, permanent delegate from KZN.
Morning, minister, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bronwyn Engelbrecht, representing Gauteng.
Thank you, honourable minister.
Thank you, honourable chair, Babu Mhlanga. My name is Bladen Zamande, the minister of higher education and training. I'm joined by my two special advisors there, Mr. Naba Mandela and Ms. Lula Masizane, and then the chief director in the DG's office, Mr. Faisal Tufi, who is going to be assisting me in this presentation and interactions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. I think we must also acknowledge our administrative support staff that is with us here. They will just raise their hands, and we have my content advisor here, who is Dr. Gonde, Dr. Mimi Gonde. The Sbong, you know, you'll understand who are Africans. And I'm having Mkize here with me as my secretary. And there is an executive secretary there. She can just raise her hands. And then the researcher, we also have our researcher here, Ms. Tasmi. And yeah, Honorable Quimbuk, you can do the same. We were introducing each other here. We are welcome. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Dumisani Quimbi, a permanent delegate from the Western Cape. Thank you.
Thank you. I think in front of us, the agenda has been circulated. We were doing busy with our welcome, our opening and welcoming. Of course, we phased in the issue of introduction, which is not in the agenda. You bear with us. I think next time it must be there, because it's our standardized approach that we incorporate members introduce themselves. Then we are on item number 2, apology. I don't know, secretary, do you have any apologies?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks, Chair. Only received three written apologies. That was from Honorable Muhabi, Honorable Munegeti, Honorable Mukalakas. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members. We have three apologies that have been submitted to the Secretary. The whip of the committee has also indicated just now that he is unfortunately in hospital. I couldn't even perhaps ask who Honorable Mtetwa. He has just indicated it is in the hospital. I didn't want to go further and ask because I was just asking where he is now. I think we'll also record that apology as suit. Honourable members, can we therefore permit the following apologies? Meaning silence means content, meaning everyone understands and agrees. Thank you. We are therefore on item number 3, adoption of the agenda. I think before we go and adopt our agenda, perhaps there's one matter that perhaps we needed to flag, because perhaps this is the first meeting that we have with the Honourable Minister doing an executive undertaking as the fifth parliament. We just need to clear this to the House or the Honourable Minister that, of course, we have invited them as part of our oversight duty and our mandate is mandated by Rule 103 of the NCOP rules and the Rule 92 Section 2 of the NCOP rules. That, of course, as this committee, we were afforded a secondary, or I would say, of course, a secondary mandate that we need to do oversight on executive undertaking. I think honourable members will also remember that on the fourth parliament we never had a committee dealing with executive undertakings. So in that note, in the fifth parliament we were then accorded this mandate that we must scrutine and analyse or follow up all executive undertakings that have been taken, have been made by the ministers or executive in the house. So in that note, that is why therefore we were given this mandate, and the NCOP, therefore, the House Chairperson, therefore, flagged these executive undertakings that we need to follow them. Part of those undertakings were the ones that were made by the Minister. That is why, therefore, we are here today to, therefore, do follow-ups on making sure whether are these executive undertaking made being realized. I won't go further on explaining the mandate of the committee. I think we were all in this institution. We understand why we had this committee to deal with these issues of undertaking. But therefore, I request the House to adopt this agenda as stipulated, that item number 1 is the consideration of a progress report from the executive undertaking made by the Minister of Higher Education. And then item number 2 is the consideration of the progress report made by the Minister of Justice. Can we therefore adopt this agenda as it is? Honourable Manapula, thank you.
No, Chair. Before I adopt the agenda, I'd like to make a request and proposal that should one last item should be added on the last, should be the last before closure. It's something that I want to raise, but I just want to say in the only committee members, because I'm worried that there are so many apologies that have been submitted, which is the very important meeting that we've been waiting for such a long time of executive undertaking. And I think it has to do with the issues of housekeeping and the management of the committee. I would like to raise it in that manner. If I'm saying proposing, appealing to our committee members to support me on this last item. This is very important, the meeting that we are sitting today, and then we have so many apologies. I just want to make a appeal to other committee members for that. Thank you. And then for the adoption with that amendment.
No, thanks. I already saw a hand from Honourable Engelbrecht. I think he wanted to say something in that regard.
We support that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Although it's an internal matter that will be dealt by us after we have dealt with it. Thank you. I think we'll adopt the agenda as therefore with the additional item. Thank you. There we go. Honourable Minister, I think Now the court, it will be on your own. The ball is on at your own court. Yeah. There are these executive undertakings that were made by yourself, Honourable Minister, on the education. Yeah, on vote number 15 during the 9th June 2015. I think I won't go into details with the executive that you made. I'll just do an helicopter view on the executive that you made. One was the issue here, the establishment of Africa, of the first center on Africa language teaching. I think I'll just raise that will be the first undertaking that we expect to be given a progress around, and then perhaps members will ask questions around it if there is any arising matter around that. The second one will be the issue of adult basic education and training, which the minister also made some reference on it and made an undertaking on it. I don't want to go through all this, I think, but because they have the brief, they take us through. The third one will be the issue of the higher certificate on basically on targeting the student who have never passed the matrix. Just a brief progress on it, then perhaps members will then interrogate. I think these are the three issues per se that we requested the minister to come and debrief us with on the progress. Thank you, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of this committee, and thank you for the opportunity.
Sorry, Honourable Minister. Sorry, I think in our mess we have the Honourable Minister from the Justice, Msutu. We are welcome, Honourable Minister. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, and welcome to my colleague. On the first issue, Chair, that the committee wants to know about, I'm pleased to report that the department has supported the establishment of the Center for African Languages Teaching at the Siyabuswa campus of the University of Mpumalanga. I need to point out that this campus is dedicated to training of teachers exclusively. That is its main focus. And we also thought that it would be an ideal place to actually locate such a center. This center is a partnership with the University of Johannesburg, with funding support from ELMA Philanthropies and USAID. The center is operational. I should have apologized, Chair, sorry, because we don't have the projector, but I hope this has been distributed. Sorry, I should have checked that here. So that's slide 2 that I'm speaking to. The center is operational and mandated to research African languages teaching.
There's a hand here.
Mr. Chair, we did not receive copies of that presentation. Thank you.
I think Secretary will attend on it. He says they were being distributed in your papers. I believe all members they do now have the hard copies, eh? Because it was electronically distributed through your emails, but nevertheless now you have your hard copies. We can therefore thank you, we can carry on. Thanks, Lord Minister, sir, for that. Yes, thank you. We can carry on.
Okay. And thank you very much. I was saying that the center is operational and mandated to research African languages. That's on slide 2, on African languages teaching, and implement programs that enable the development of teachers for the African languages. Just by way of brief background, just to remind members that the reason why we are doing this is because we are trying to address a very serious matter, the decline in the teaching of African languages in our higher education institutions, which has got huge implications, for instance, in foundational phase of basic education, because those teachers use mother tongue instruction. On the second matter of community education, by the way, I should have said added also on the first matter, just for the interest and information of members, that this center will also promote research into teaching African languages, starting particularly with the dominant languages of the Mpumalanga province, which is Ndebele and is Swati. On the second matter of adult basic education and training, just to remind ourselves, the 2011 census has indicated that there are 18 million South Africans in need of adult basic education and training. Now, this is enormous, it's huge. If you think about it just by way of illustration, this is bigger than the rest of the education system in the country. Basic education is 12 million learners. Potentially, you know, we are talking here of 18 million. And our universities have just got over 1 million of our formal education institutions. And TVET colleges are just over 700,000. So you combine all those, it's still less than what research is telling us is the demand for adult basic education and training in our country. What we have done then since the announcement of this is that the department has established what we refer to as a community education and training branch, because we've decided that, you know, the department inherited these adult basic education and training centers from the provinces. When was that, Faisal? When were they transferred to us? 2015, officially transferred to us. It's a highly fragmented sector, this, and very uneven. You know, some of these adult basic education and training centers, many of them, they do not have their own premises or buildings. They use schools, churches, community halls, etc. We also are calling them this because we've decided that the one strength, but also a shortfall, of your adult basic education and training centers is that they only focused on improving one's formal education. If you left school in standard 5, you then want to go to this center to do standard 6, and so on. It's important because it's addressing the needs of those adults who are out of school but never finished school, who want to improve themselves. But we think the shortfall is that South African adults need a wider variety of opportunities, not only to improve one's formal education. For example, A 40-year-old lady may identify an opportunity of selling cakes to the nearby schools. And left school in standard 5, all she may be interested in is to go and be trained in baking, for example. Other examples, it could be someone who sees an opportunity of households that are next to the highways to do fencing in rural areas in order to protect livestock, you know, and all that. So we want to build a vocational component to this. I must say, though, in our report that we have established this branch in the department. It's now a separate branch. And there is already an interim acting deputy director general. By the way, it's the first time in our country that adult basic education has a deputy director general. Because in the provinces, the highest they had was a director. So as part of elevating this, the post of the DDG will be advertised during the month of September because we are quite keen to fill it up. I'm also pleased to announce, Chairperson and honorable members, that what we have done for a start since we committed to this, we've established now 9 community education and training colleges, one in each province. In other words, we are creating now an overarching structure in each province which will connect these adult learning centers, support them, service them, and so on. We don't know in future as we go forward, as we grow and consolidate this, maybe we will have to have a community college per district. But for a start, this is what we've done. And we've also appointed councils, do we call them that? Councils for all the 9 council members who are now working, and also principals of these 9 community colleges. So there is some progress, significant progress, since we announced this. However, Chair, it's important that we also raise this because it's a program that's underfunded. And members of parliament have to be aware of this because this is the challenge that we are having. Maybe without taking much of your time, for the NCOP in particular, it's important to know this. Something you may want to interrogate moving forward. We are a department with a hugely unfunded mandate. For example, if you take Division of Revenue, which is one of your areas of interest, I have no doubt about that, as the NCOP. Division of Revenue uses a formula that has got certain assumptions on how you divide the National Revenue Fund between national government and provincial government. One of the assumptions which you may want to examine, I don't have the concrete details, but we know that this is an issue, is that it assumes that youth, for instance, between the ages of 6, say, and 18, what percentage of them are at school? And then you divide money between national government and provincial departments of education. The assumptions there are exaggerated. We assume that a lot more of our youth is at school than it actually is at school. Because we have got a huge dropout rate, especially after grade 9. Now, I wish that you will examine that at some stage. I'm just flagging it. It's not necessarily for discussion today. And what happens is that some of these youngsters who leave school in grade 9, they come to the TVET colleges. And yet the Division of Revenue doesn't adequately cater for that. It also then would reflect, I was just making an example on funding for community education and training colleges. But I just thought that I needed to highlight the issue of underfunding, because it is really a challenge that we would like members of parliament, especially NCOP, to look into. Now, on the last matter, Chair, that you asked us to report on higher certificates, we have a qualifications framework in South Africa which categorizes levels of education. For instance, matric, it's NQF level 2 to 4. That would be grades 10, 11, and 12. Grade 12 is NQF level 4. Then university degrees, diplomas would start from NQF level 6. Now there is this gap of NQF level 5 programs, which are there, but we think that is why we're raising this, that the country needs a lot of people with NQF level 5 qualifications. That's your mid-level skills, in essence. So the higher certificate aims to address that. Now, and also there is increasing pressure on TVET colleges to offer more qualifications at NQF levels 5 and 6. This is mainly due to the fact that access to universities are restricted. Honorable Chair, honorable members, just to remind you, statistics tell us that out of 100 youngsters who start grade 1, only 12 of them go to university. So we have 88 who are not at university, which we need to cater for in our post-schooling system or through community, and also including, by the way, community education and training colleges. So that's why there is this big demand for NQF level 5. For example, let me just to give the work that we have done, give you an idea of some of the work that we've done on the score. Some universities and colleges are beginning to pilot what we call foundation phase programs, which are at NQL level 5 higher certificates. For example, we want to target math and science learners who have done grade 12 but have not passed maths. They got between 40 and 49%, for example. And we do need to increase math and science learners into the system. So instead of asking those youngsters to repeat grade 12, personally, I'm not a great fan of repeating grade 12, by the way. I think that we need to much more creative ways of dealing with that. Some would have performed that way because they didn't have math and science teachers in their schools, or they had very poorly qualified math and science teachers. So what you do, you don't repeat matric, but you take them through math and science, and you may add, this is what we want to pilot, language proficiency, which normally is an issue, and you add ICT skills and life skills, for instance. That's what they would do as your certificate. But you help them to do, not only to repeat your math and science and matric, you will take them through but also raise that to the level that they have a foot in the door of a university. They can be able to go after this higher certificate to do medicine, to do engineering, those who perform well. Let me not take much more of your time, Chair, but I just thought that I need to give you a taste of some of the things that we are piloting. Now, of course, we want to expand, as I said, higher certificates, which are limited when compared to degree options. The need for mid-level skills. For instance, you could do an NQF level 5 maths and science, and then you choose to either go to a college or go to a university, or get a job as a laboratory assistant, for instance. So it's those kinds of things that we are looking at, although we are not only looking at maths and science. It increases opportunities also to address life skills. On slide 5, we are indicating some of the initiatives. The bridging program, which I've already spoken about, and the University of the Free State has been a key driver of this process. Universities also, some universities have also developed higher certificates, which could be delivered at TVET colleges. Now, this is an innovation, because we are saying to universities, create these programs, but let them be offered in a TVET college. Already we've got about 13 memoranda of understanding between universities and colleges for colleges to offer higher certificates programs that are accredited by the universities, which makes it easy because those who pass those higher certificates, who may have failed matric, for example, are then able to proceed to those universities where there is a memorandum of understanding because they would have met the minimum requirements. Slide 6, I've already spoken about that, although funding remains a challenge in these partnerships. And also the TVET college sector has worked with Quality Council for Trades and Occupations, QCTO, to develop and implement more occupational qualifications at level 5. To date, we are pleased to announce that the QCTO has registered more than 150 programs at the level of higher certificate, and a number of pilot programs are underway to test and refine the implementation of occupational programs at TVET colleges. Now, let me end by saying this, without expanding the mandate that we've been given to talk about today, about occupational programs. We are pleased and we are working together with the Department of Basic Education in its attempt now to introduce streams in the schooling system. Because our schooling system has largely been academically oriented. You expect everybody to study, do matric, pass well and go to university. That's why only 12 of 100 youngsters managed to get to university. So the Department of Basic Education now really wants to strengthen the offerings of occupational and vocational programs in the schooling system. That will help us as the Department of Higher Education to also receive relatively ready-made students in our TVET colleges and in our universities who are pursuing vocational type programs like engineering, for instance, etc. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Sorry if I've taken a bit longer.
No, not so much. I don't know, Minister. Perhaps the state of justice, something, I don't know. But I think we have covered everything. Minister, the only issue is in terms, especially in terms of the programs that are offered at TVET colleges, for example, through the Memorandum of Agreement. Currently, you find that those courses are not within the TVET college sphere, so therefore the cost of offering those courses are at a university level fee structure.
and is not subsidized, because technically students at TVET colleges are supposed to be subsidized by government at 80% of the cost of the course. But currently, when these courses are offered, it is actually at the full cost that is being offered at the institution, for example, at UNISA, although it's being offered currently at the TVET college level. And there are roughly about 13 of those agreements in operation now currently.
No, thanks. I think this is a brief note, and they've at least did what we requested them to do, to just give us more progress on the executive undertaking itself, not generally on issues of TVETs and your CETAs. Of course, there are so many issues with this committee around issues of CETAs and so on. But I won't allow the members to go beyond the petition. Of course, there are so many issues that we need to ask government. Members, I think if we want to set time for charity seeking question or comments to you, members, Honorable Engelberg, Honorable Shetty, Honorable Manapul, Honorable Wana, Honorable Kimby. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thanks very much, and Minister, thank you for that briefing. I found that very interesting. Firstly, in terms of the Siyabusa campus at Mpumalanga, if you could just tell me how many students are enrolled and how and what is the results that you've experienced so far. And then you've spent a lot of time speaking about the community education and training, and it's very exciting, but if you can just clarify what type of training will be given at these colleges and how many students are enrolled currently. And then I would like to find out, we're speaking a lot about almost tertiary education, what about practical education for these students that leave school in grade 9, has the department started working on increasing practical training colleges, teaching people to be plumbers and to be painters and to be fitters and turners, all those type of practical things which you just don't get anymore? And then lastly, in terms of the higher certificate, could you just explain why do those students not get a subsidy? The gentleman was speaking about 80% is normally subsidized, but these students are not subsidized. If you could just explain that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I want to compliment the Minister and your department for taking ABET as seriously as you are. You see, the sooner our people engage in further educating themselves, the sooner they become employable, in spite of the shortage of jobs in South Africa. And Minister, just an indulgence. Are you aware of the students who are studying medicine in China, but due to the moratorium being placed by universities that have prevented them from being placed in state hospitals? There has been this debate whether it's the Department of Health or the Department of Education who is responsible for this. The concern here, Chairperson, is that we are part of BRICS. You're well aware, Minister, coming from KZN, that the MEC, Blomo, is sitting in Parliament today answering for the shortage of doctors in the country. And if you're taking education as serious as you are with ABET, I'm just concerned why is there some lack in making sure that those students aren't being entertained. Thank you.
Okay. Before, maybe Honourable Manapule, before you come in, let me first clear something. Honourable Minister, the executive undertaking, it speaks on issues of, I think we mentioned those, the three issues that we speak of. Now, regarding the questions that have been posed to you, I think some of the issues are now out of the scope. But it will be within yourself. If you have enough information to give to them, you can give to the members. But if you don't have, perhaps you can even write in response of those other issues. I'm just trying to make it that we are in the parameters. We're not out of the square of our petition. Thank you. Honorable Manapule. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Lina laka ke Manopole. Manopole.
Thank you.
Honorable Minister, thank you very much. We would like to welcome the progress that you've made so far to date since your undertaking. So it's important that when one makes undertaking, it does ensure that implements and show the commitment to that undertaking. So, however, I'm two of my question that I wanted to raise, which I've been covered. To me, it's more of the adult basically teaching them adult learning, which is very important. But now, one thing that we have raised, which is I think is also a challenge, with regards to the computing priorities, where we're raising the issue of under budgeting of that issue, which is I think is very key and important. And I hope that Minister at some point will be able to maneuver around your budget and reprioritize if there's a need for you to redirect the funds from the CITAS to address this this program, which is very important for us to address this adult basic education and training when we seek to reverse the issue of literacy in our country. Mine is I welcome the progress that you have made so far with regards, and also what you have yourself seen and committed to ensure that the focus should go to TVET College, and welcome that. Mine, I think that which is raised an issue can be a concern. It will contribute to what we have raised, that the dropout of grade 9. There's an issue that when the matriculants have failed, when they go to TVET College, they start from N1, N2, N3 before they go to N4. In our province, some of them get frustrated, they drop out even before they reach N4 because of the how it takes them 3 years for them to reach N4. And then N4, N5, N6 will also take 1.5 years. So it seems that it, to me, it circumvents the process that you want to address of the dropout of and also it adds on the issues of the patterns of skills that we need in our country. Just want to check, have you noticed that? And if you have noticed that, what are you doing to address that the challenge that is confronted the young people that are faced with? Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think maybe perhaps I should keep it, and I wanted to explore the situation of the issue of the petition. No, this committee, we're dealing with the executive undertaking and the petition that is confronted with us, which issue of here in the Western Cape, or maybe perhaps should wait, and then when we have done our conclusion, the minister will address the issues. I hope we will forward our recommendation to the minister to address, because it speaks mostly about the CITA. That's young people are confronted with the frustrations of the CITAs that they're being exposed to. At some point, the CITAs have been exploited, and then also the issues of fraud with those at the colleges. Maybe I think maybe let me wait, and then as the committee have done the recommendation, we'll forward those recommendations to the minister so that he can address those issues. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think we were taught somewhere where we were trained that we need to cover time and cover space. And we were also told that when you are given an opportunity, you must occupy space and command. I will allow the honorable member here to only flag these issues that you take note, although you are not going to respond on them. Just flag them, because, of course, as a petition committee and executive, we are challenged on these issues. shoot a mama. You can shoot. Just raise these issues. Perhaps the following will then. Although you are not going to respond on them, Minister, we are still going to put recommendation on it. Thank you. Yes.
No, Chair. For me to, I want to be succinct. Can you give Honourable Trimby first so I can summarise and then be given to the Deputy Minister.
Thank you. Honourable Trimby.
Chairperson, no, I'm covered, Chair. I'm covered. Except that I want to know from the Minister about the one who received 14 million rand. I was going to cover. Thank you, Chair.
That is out of record. I think you that will be doing out of the records. Can you switch off that? I think we can now, Honourable Wana, do you have something? Okay. I think Honourable Minister is now with you. You can perhaps give your team wherever you need them to clear, or you can clear some of the situations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Honourable Engelbrecht, I don't know, Faisal, if you've got details on Siyabuso. We've requested by SMS because we did not bring those details with us here. If we don't get it before we finish here, we can send that information to you on Siyabuso, the figures, you know, and the pass rates. Now, you know, our own view of community colleges is that these community colleges must actually serve local needs. What is taught, there could be standard programs, like for instance, we are going to be introducing what we call the National Senior Certificates for Adults, NASCA. Because it doesn't make sense that you have an 18-year-old who is writing matric, writes exactly the same exam as a 35 or 40-year-old, you know. So we are going to, in fact, we have delayed, though we must admit, because of funding challenges as well, more than anything else, to introduce the certificate. So that could be a standard thing that's offered in all community colleges. But the rest really should be determined by need. And how then we support that. That's why we are trying to bring these community colleges closer to the people, with provincial structures, then they will affiliate to that, and then they will be supported. I suppose one of the things that we're thinking of, which we see as a need, are vocational type program. You know, they should be acquiring particular skills. There could also be bridging programs, by the way, that you could have also at community colleges for people to be able, say, to access a TVET college. Now, on practical training, Honourable Engelbrecht, I suggest, I should say this because I think we have the figures. Adult community colleges at the moment, they're at about 350. Around about 300,000 out of a demand of 18 million in terms of our assessment. So it's very tiny sector at the moment. We really need to grow it if we are to respond to the challenges that are facing South African adults who are out of school. Vocational training, that's what we are trying to do with the TVET colleges. Because entrance at a TVET college for what is called the National Certificate Vocational, NCV, is a pass in grade 9. But I must admit we are reviewing that together with the Department of Basic Education because the failure rate at NCV level is too high. And there are many reasons. I don't have time to count all of them. But let me give you one. Imagine a grade 9 leaving school, going to a college where discipline is different, looking after oneself. Some of them leave school, by the way, because they want to have that freedom at college. These are still youngsters, you know. Also, there is NSFAS, including some NSFAS allowances. Some of them, they would leave school and go to TVET, not because they are interested already, but because if you get a NSFAS food allowance or transport allowance, for many of the poor kids, that's normally what makes a difference at home. Not because, well, not because they are abusing the money necessarily, but so we are re-looking at this, working with the Department of Basic Education. Thank you. Because we have to address the failure rate is too much. By the way, the Department of Basic Education has technical high schools. There are about 1,000 of them. We possibly need to expand those so that you don't have kids dropping out of grade 9 and going to a TVET college. They stay and take the technical route at school rather than to go to a TVET college. Those are some of the challenges we are dealing with, though. We are also trying to deal with this because we are reviewing the NCV itself. And it's correct. I can't remember who was talking about okay, maybe let me leave that for now. I will see this. I can't read my handwriting. It's so terrible, you know. Honorable Chair, my apologies. I thought we explained that, you see, one of the challenges... Chair, you can criticize us. Maybe we'll accept that criticism, that we sometimes start programs without adequate funding because of just sheer demand. You know? That is there. We can't ignore that. And it's very difficult because... And that's where, by the way, also we've been using CETA monies and the monies from the Skills Fund. For instance, our idea is that we should largely fund community colleges through this skills levy. But the horror story there, Chair, I hope I'm not misquoted on that. 5 billion rand has been taken from the National Skills Fund to pay for fees must fall. Now, that's a huge injustice at another level, because we are taking away money from community colleges. We also use that money to support vocational training, artisans, training of artisans. And we are channeling it to one sector, which caters for 12 out of 100. And we take money meant for the 88, to the 12. So already that is a huge challenge. 5 billion is gone. By the way, some of that money we had set aside 1 billion to send South African students to different parts of the world to do their masters and PhDs, because we are running short of academics in our universities. Average academic, 60% of our academics are 55 years or older. And the situation is not self-correcting. So I just thought maybe let me just indicate then also why then are the students not getting subsidy, the UNQF level 5. It's because these are programs done together with universities. But who funds is an issue. Because we are also pushing universities to do this, but we are not giving them additional money. And colleges also, they do not have this money to run this NQF level 5. It's one of the things we are introducing cautiously. There is no funding for it, hardly. Sometimes we use the skills money to try and support some of this. But that's not sustainable. You need baseline funding from the fiscus. Honorable Chetty, we are addressing this issue of South African students, for instance, who are doing medicine in China. We've just signed, I'm pleased to say that, an agreement with China on mutual recognition of qualifications, because we did not have that. We have that with a number of other countries, Russia, etc., and many other countries that we never had, so that there is comparability. On the Chinese medical program, the single biggest problem we have in South Africa is that Chinese structure of the medical degree is that they only start going to health places, clinics or hospitals in their 60s. In South Africa, we start that 4th year. So there is a problem because they finish training, in fact, the 5 years. Their undergrad degree without having ever seen a hospital. So that's now at variance with our own system. So those are the issues that we are going to be addressing with this mutual recognition of qualifications and what it means. Because we are right, shortage of doctors require that we try and get them from wherever we can get them, you know. South Africans who have got opportunities. Honorable Manupule, very briefly, yeah, that's the point I couldn't see when you were talking about reprioritizing our budget. We just no longer have that space. The fact that 5 billion rand gets taken away is reprioritization. So we have nothing. We are currently funding TVET colleges at 53% instead of 80%. So there is nothing to reprioritize. Our universities are underfunded, are hugely underfunded. In fact, I just got a figure yesterday that GDP spend on our universities, excluding NSFAS, because NSFAS is directed exclusively at student funding, it's 0.67%. The African average is 0.78. So we are below the continental average. Ideally, we should be at 1 or 2% of the GDP money that we set aside to fund our universities. So there is no space for reprioritization. Which means we have to dump other programs and say we sacrifice this. So far there is nothing that we can say actually we need to sacrifice. Black South Africans are still hugely underrepresented in terms of university education. We need to improve that too. yeah. Cetus will talk at another time. I'm just laughing because of this 14 million rand. I'm sure you were not expecting me to. We are dealing with that. We are dealing with that. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, our minister. I think you have tried to tell us. I'll give you honorable Manopule. It's busy right, Martin. I'm just going to be the church, Mama, then there will be a challenge. Yeah, but there are one or two things perhaps we'll request. Before I sum up, Honorable Shetty, you'll have the space because your matter is not around. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I just want to thank the Minister for at least responding to that. I know it was outside of what we were going to discuss, but thank you. It's important that at least we have some leeway, but thank you very much for that.
Okay, now one perhaps is issue of statistics, né? In regard to Siyaboswa. And the other matter perhaps, if we can be briefly given information on the 150 programs that you outrolled, the beneficiation part of it, who benefits out of these 150 programs on your QCTO programs. Just statistics. It's all about statistics. And then the other matter before we conclude on this one. Yes, you have the statistics. Oh, okay, the statistics are already here. We'll come in. Perhaps after they've given us the statistics, on our Manapula, then we'll come in. Sorry? Yeah.
No, sorry, you can respond to all of them. Yeah. Yeah, let me read. It's really a follow-up.
Okay.
Well, there was a question that was raised that the minister said they have opened CET colleges in all provinces. We didn't get an indication where are they in provinces, where are they placed. So when you go and do oversight, you'll be able to see those colleges, where are they placed. And the one of the CS, they are raised the issue that matriculant will, one learner will fail matric, and when you go to college, you will start for 3 years doing, forget the matric before you can go to do N4. So that's one I didn't get the response to that one, because it's really frustrating for that. I'm not raising with regards to the dropouts of the grade 9. Where we have failed matric, failed only 2 subjects, and we end up failing, then we have to start we have to be 3 years at the college. Thank you.
Honourable Minister, these are the follow-up question, and you then give us the statistics. Then from there, Honourable Pula will come and then give you more on this and on the CETAs, then we'll close. Thank you.
No, in fact, let me apologise for I missed that. Again, blame myself with my handwriting. You know. You are right. You had asked that. It's not a follow-up question. You had actually asked. That's part of reviewing the NCV that I was talking about. Because you are right. There is a huge wastage in the system. Because NCV is exactly the same as matric. So some youngsters would fail matric and say, hey, let me go and try college. They've already done grade 12, they didn't pass. So when you go to do the NCV, you go back to grade 10. It's grade 10, 11, and 12, 3 years. That's why we are saying we are reviewing the NCV program completely. And now also we are pleased that basic education is looking at these options, because that, the solution lies somewhere there. That if you then allow NCV, for instance, I'm not saying that's going to be the case, but it could be that you could take NCV back to technical high schools, not at college, so that then they proceed along the technical line doing grades 10, 11, and 12. But even before that, we are also looking at options, whether NCV should be 3 years if you have done grade 12. But also there are certain courses that if you are doing a vocational certificate that you have to do. Then at what level do we do that? So that's part of, we have a turnaround strategy for TVET colleges. This is one of the issues that we are looking at. Siyabuswa campus, I think we opened it in 2012. As a campus initially of University of Johannesburg, which then got transferred to University of Mpumalanga when we opened the new University of Mpumalanga. It started with 100 students. It's got 400 now students who are training as teachers. The growth plans is that college, when it's fully functional, which also will be determined by funds, should actually train about 3,000 teachers. Mainly for the Mpumalanga province. Of course, you can't restrict any South African now. Can go anywhere. Most of them, we hope, they will actually be teaching in Mpumalanga. I think that should be adequate, Chair.
The breakdown in terms of the occupation process,
yes,
from
yes,
we
yes.
will provide that to the committee.
Okay, thank you. I think we will therefore offer Honourable Manapule on the latter issue in regard to issues that are challenging us as this committee, since we have them. We use the opportunity, I think it will be just 2 or 3 minutes just to sum up these issues, and then perhaps we'll then communicate with you through our recommendations and so on out of that. Yeah, Honourable Manapule, thank you.
One more thing, we're also going to provide information through you on where the seats of the community colleges are in the various provinces.
No, Chair. I think there are three issues that there's a college, African Skills College in here in Western Cape, where some of the learners submitted the petitions to us, to this committee. But there are three things that they want to raise, which they raise it to us. And one, I think, which is will cut up, it's cut across it most of the. Of the TVET colleges, maybe in universities as well. We have seen it as well in the media. Is the issue, or one is think is common denominator, issue of corruption. So in the where the sitters pay out to the institution, and the institution, the time when they pay money to the learners, I mean the student, there's a corruption that will be taking place in that. In this petition, when the learner says that they don't get their stipend on time, and also the stipend is also the issue of racism also has been raised. It depends who they don't get in the same amount of stipend as been rationalized those issues of the stipend as well, and it's not getting, they are not receiving on the monthly basis. Sometimes you quarterly. Sometimes, and as a result of that, most of learners and students have dropped out because of the frustration of this stipend. And I think this issue of stipend is only that those speaks here. It will also reflect to the issues of the 14 million as well. I'm just raising it. I link it. In our province, Northern Cape, there's the TVET college learners, students are striking as we speak with the issues of the stipend as well. So if maybe the minister with regards to that, I'm not sure if there's a monitoring and evaluation with regards to the sitters on the management of the stipend. Is it left out to them to deal with the issues of dispensing the money to the university, and the university also dispensing of the money to the learners? Because it's where some corruption is happening. The issue of the, because this CETA that we're speaking about here in this African is a CETA that is key, that is giving the problem to these learners. So those are the issues that the learners have been victimized when they raise the issues of this stipend and the CETAs and the treatment of the learners. And the issue mostly is the issues of racism in this college. So those are, I think, everything will be packaged and our recommendation will be submitted to the minister. But I'm just saying that since we are here, we should bring it to your attention while you are waiting. Yourself, you prepare the time when you receive our recommendation. You will be well ahead how to approach and implement our recommendation. Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity that you have presented to me. Thank you.
No, thanks. I think that is for the department to take note. In this regard, the issue of stipend, just to give, let me give the minister to...
Very, very briefly, Chair, I'm aware of your time. I think that I would be doing an injustice on this 40 million if I don't tell you that we've already asked for a report from NSFAS and from the Walter Sisulu University to tell us exactly what happened. And we would like to see a very deep investigation here, including, was this a mistake or something deliberate that was being done? Because that question has to be asked. There are just too many things. We're dealing with that at an appropriate time. We will inform you as to what, we'll find a way to communicate as to what the story is. Just lastly, yes, we would appreciate to get the details on the CETA problems and the college, you know, and so on. But normally, Chair, CETAs give money to service providers who then pay stipends. That's the normal. Except one CETA which has changed that because of these problems. It's ETDP CETA, which even if they give a service provider work to do, but they retain the responsibility for payment of stipends to students, because some service providers, they just eat everything, including the students. That's a problem we are dealing with, but we'll talk about the sitters generally one day if you want us to. Thank you.
Thanks, Minister. In that note, I think we have come to the conclusion of the meeting. Let me ask I think we're through with the first session, the first item. And in that note, I would just afford and say to the minister and his department, thanks for your response. We will be submitting a report to the House with recommendation on this issue. I think we will, of course, flag the issue of the budget itself, as you raise it, and I mean, it's a main bedrock that you are faced with as this department. We will raise it sharply, and we will perhaps put more recommendation on it. I don't want to what we are going to be recommending, but yes, we will raise these issues. In that note, Minister, thanks. I hope we will then meet again in the House in regard to these other issues, the children's issues. Thank you. I think the meeting is not yet closed, Honourable Members. We are now to deal with item number 2. Which is justice. We were planning that we'll start their meeting. We will start with the item at 10 o'clock, though we're still fine in timing. I think we haven't taken their time. We can therefore go direct to the issues of justice. Honourable Minister, I think the seats in front are for yourself and your staff. You need to. Anyway, Minister, okay, Honourable Minister, you can be comfortable. Anyway, in front desk, you can be comfortable. I think because we were saying we were going to start at with the second item at exactly at 10 o'clock. I see here there is about 8 or 6 minutes still left. Can you have a 5 minute break for yourself? Honourable Members, just to have tea. Please. Yeah. I think we rather start our meeting. We just requested for a break. The meeting was officially opened. I think the first thing that we will have to do, since we are now in item number 2, I don't know whether is the agenda. We are now in item number 2. I was thinking that everyone does have the agenda circulated. Item number 2, which is to consider the report from the executive undertaking made by the Minister of Justice. I think before we will go back, it will be. We know the minister. We know the members of the justice officials of the justice. Is there a reason for them to introduce themselves? No, we know each other. We're one cluster. Therefore, I think minister, I won't go. I think I should just briefly go direct to the executive undertaking made by the department by yourself in the House during the sitting of sector. What was it? Of June. Yeah. Now these are there are 3 executive undertakings that were made by the minister during vote number 21 on justice and correctional services for June. I think the first issue will be the issue of rationalization of magistrates and districts court in the provinces. We just wanted to get a briefly progress report and whether it is being realized, this executive undertaking in these provinces, particularly the Mpumalanga and the Mpumpo, because Gauteng and Northwest is being already realized, as you reported to us. Then the second issue on the executive undertaking will be the issue of the additional courts on mediation services on this course. How far have we achieved this objective? Are we realizing it or what? The third one will be the issue of workshops that were supposed to be run through the department and the correctional services on intake. And yeah, I think these are the three issues. And I don't want to go into detail. You have the memo that was sent to you in this regard. Can I therefore offer you the pitch and the court is sent? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues, members of the committee. Indeed, it's a good opportunity for us to share with the committee some of the work we do. And if you allow me to indulge briefly now to ease our way out of education into a different focus area, just to say that we are just as equally excited about education issues because we need those skills ourselves to support our own work. Although I must say that the budgetary constraints due to austerity that's affecting everybody, as well as in order to support the Fees Must Fall campaign, has had its own toll on all of us in government, including ourselves, for example. We've had to freeze our intake programs for new graduates who obviously see government as a critical opportunity to ply their skills once they've acquired all these qualifications. Our graduate program at Justice has been frozen. We have a program at Corrections where we were targeting in the region of about 4,000 new intakes into, you know, new entrants, where the minimum qualification was just matric, and we thought we were meeting a critical need within society whilst at the same time addressing a huge shortage in capacity within the department. I can just tell you that when our department's structure was assessed back in 2003, it was determined that we needed 60,000 employees. The actual approved staff complement eventually was 42,000. But as we speak, we're not allowed to absorb another new entry-level entrant despite the vacancies that are clearly there and needed. So that is the story that we are all facing in South Africa today because of economic constraints. But back to the tasks at hand, Chairperson. Let me start by indicating that the ushering of the new constitutional dispensation in 1994 meant that things cannot stay the same. In the sense, in relation to our justice system, for example, that the special planning under apartheid based on race and therefore the distribution of services along those lines had to be revisited. In this regard, this has meant, in relation to the justice system, amongst others, that we had to revisit where our courts are located in relation to where our people are, and to match the real need for access to justice to the actual infrastructure and its location, with the consequence that we committed ourselves and have fulfilled that commitment of ensuring that at least every single year, on average, since democracy, since 1994, we built at least two new courts in South Africa. We are at the stage now where we have achieved the completion of 54 courts throughout the country. Particular emphasis has been to build new infrastructure in your rural, far-flung areas which had no access but linked to that has also been to rationalize the jurisdiction of the schools, because the apartheid special planning also meant that people had to stick within their homeland boundaries in relation to accessing services. So you would find a community that is situated just next door to a court, but because that court is demarcated outside of that, say, municipal area, people will not then be able to utilize that court that's nearby and would have to travel longer distances to access a court elsewhere. So we've been looking at, firstly, striving to align our magisterial districts with our new municipal demarcations, whilst at the same time allowing for some degree of flexibility to accommodate issues of distance, because we are conscious that distance means cost, and especially with your rural communities who just don't have the money to travel, that translate into denial of access to justice. In the same vein, the constitution, the new constitutional dispensation, created the imperative that now that we have created new 9 provinces, each of these provinces had to have a dedicated division of the High Court. We have almost fulfilled that constitutional mandate in that last year, 2016, in January, the Limpopo High Court in Polokwane opened its doors and it's in full operation. It was officially launched in November last year. We had targeted to have Mpumalanga completed by the end of next year, so that this year early it could start in earnest. There's been a number of challenges there. I'll not go into all the details of it. Some of them are still currently being resolved. I'm due to go to Mpumalanga in 2 weeks' time to meet some of my executive counterparts in the province to negotiate further certain of the logistical challenges. It's a story of a situation where line function departments generally do not have the capacity for effective infrastructure planning and defer some of these responsibilities to those departments whose responsibility is to deal with infrastructure. And as a service user department, we've learned hard lessons that you actually do need that capacity so that you can, from planning stage, overseeing the infrastructure development process all the way to the final realization of new infrastructure and its maintenance, etc., that all of that needs specialized skills. As we speak, the difficulty with the Mpumalanga High Court, which we intend to go and help resolve, is key to the challenges is the issue of the access routes into the court building itself. It was built close to the highway. Is it Samaramasha Highway? So we've had years of negotiation with the municipality around that road being a main road and governed under particular laws, and the difficulty of the court only being accessible via that road. So I'll not go into details as to what are the proposed plans to overcome that. There were other logistical problems that caused delay. I recall when I visited the site 2 years ago, when things were still at a rudimentary stage, when they spoke to the engineers, they were telling me that when they started drilling, they found this very solid rock that was not envisaged in the planning, so that affected and caused delay in the actual construction. But we are hoping that before the end of this year, we should be able to officially open the doors of that court. The JSC has already recommended, and the president has already appointed Justice Lekgodi from August as the new president of the court. We're looking at with the president having approved, has he approved already? For transfers of judges from other divisions, so that we can immediately inject experienced judges into that court, at the seat of the court, to get it running as soon as it's ready. We're also looking at a further three who will be located at one of the local seats. One of the initiatives that we have introduced under the new dispensation in terms of the Superior Courts Act, the current Superior Courts Act, the 2013, is to build into the rollout of court sites the notion of local divisions, which under apartheid were very limited. So the idea is to ensure that in big geographical areas, municipalities with big geographical areas, you have one or two local seats which are full service courts, which would be able to provide a full service as compared to the erstwhile system of circuit courts, which provide a limited service. And in some of these local courts, you would have resident judges, one or more judges, who would be physically based there. From Mpumalanga, for example, there's going to be two local seats, but the main local seat is going to be Middelburg, where there will be three judges located physically there. In terms of rollout of the rationalization program, we started with Gauteng and Northwest, and naturally moving into Limpopo and Mpumalanga, reason being that the creation of those two latter courts meant that Gauteng Court, which was covering the whole of Mpumalanga and Limpopo, now has to be rationalized, to subdivide it in a sense into three separate high courts. One dedicated court for Limpopo, another dedicated court for Mpumalanga, and of course Gauteng then clipping its wings a bit so that its jurisdiction is confined to the geographical area of Gauteng. So that was the first four courts, high courts that were rationalized, and naturally then the rationalization of the magisterial districts in those four courts was the next step to pursue. With regard to the other provinces, Free State and Northern Cape are currently underway. We've already issued proclamations to that effect. I think by December this year we should be seeing the full implementation of the rationalization of the magisterial districts of those two provinces. And next year, 2018-19, would then roll out the other big ones, Eastern Cape and KZN. And finally, where we are in the Western Cape,
will be during the election year 2020. So that is the plan in terms of rollout of our rationalization program. Coming to the area of Cotonex mediation, you'd recall it was in December 2014 when we lodged the first two sites of next court mediation, Deep Sloot in Gauteng and was it Mafeking in the northern in northwest, and since then we have been rolling out this program gradually because it's a completely new dispensation in our justice system. What Cotonex mediation is about is to divert matters from outright conventional litigation with its consequent high costs, which makes it inaccessible for many people as a means of dispute resolution, to a less costly system, which is less adversarial, more reconciliatory, where the principle of winner takes all is not necessarily the primary focus, but where you focus on a win-win situation. It's worked well in the areas of divorce settlements and other family disputes, where actually that is the ideal way to resolve disputes anyway. And of course, we'll be rolling it out to other areas of law, of civil law. We are receiving reports on progress and the impact that this has had in access to justice and its effectiveness to do an assessment so that when we roll out in full earnest nationally, we know that we are feeding South Africans with something that it's worth. We're targeting 30 by the end of the financial year. So far we've covered 10, I think, 7 in Gauteng, not 12, 9 in Gauteng and 3 in Northwest. And those experiences will come in quite handy for us. Certainly the cost of litigation has been significantly reduced as a result of the rollout in those areas where this is happening. We're also focusing on training whilst absorbing professionals of different backgrounds into the system, but of course setting standards at the same time so that the quality of service that's provided to our people is one that's acceptable and appropriate. The issue of consequence management for both departments, of course, being in the security and the criminal justice cluster, we have to lead by example in fighting crime and corruption. And it has to start, say, charity starts at home. We at the Department of Justice, for example, have made certain undertakings with regard to the training of officials around existing legislation and new developments in this area, on whistleblowing in particular, on the disclosures that have to be made by officials, and you know, sensitizing them to the new prohibitions of officials doing business with the state, which was legislation that was recently passed by Parliament, etc.
there's been significant progress. I think with justice we started off with an undertaking of some 224. We started with an undertaking of 24 workshops of this kind, and we ended up with about 54, so almost double what we had undertaken during the first year. And we continue to roll out these training sessions, and the details thereof I'll not burden you, I think, in the secular. It's all there. Similarly with corrections, we have been rolling out training programs or workshops in this regard. And I may just also add that we've also, I'm not sure if that's not specifically requested, but just to mention that we have in full earnest been pursuing consequence management itself beyond just training and sensitization, where officials were guilty of misconduct of some form or another, especially in this area of fraud and corruption. And we've realized a number of dismissals in both departments, and the details of how many cases in the past two financial years, as well as in the first quarter of this year, are actually provided in the circular for members to read. Maybe I'll pause there.
Another question that we did.
Yeah. I'll pause there and entertain questions, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. I think the Minister has taken us through the requested executive undertaking progress report, but there's one perhaps I can maybe request that the minister give us more clarity on it, the filling in of the vacancy. Yes, thank you.
My apologies. We when we commenced, we dubbed one of the Hollywood departments in government for having a large number of acting stints, including that of the National Commissioner of the department at the time. I can just indicate that as we undertook at that time, in June of 2015, already we had the National Commissioner of Corrections, Mr. Zach Modise, appointed. Unfortunately, he turned 60 on the 30th of June this year. Sorry, 30th of August this year. And in terms of the Public Service, so not the Public Service, Correctional Services Act, you retire when you reach 60, not when you reach 65. We could have extended, but we thought perhaps, given some of the persistent challenges in the department, we should go out and fish again. So we're going to be advertising the position fairly soon. The CDC positions, at the time, we had a vacancy for the CDC strategy, and in October that year, 2015, we were able to fill that vacancy, and it's still filled. Mr. Katenga is currently the CDC. He was appointed in October that year. We also had critical vacancies at RC level. Gauteng, which is one of our larger regions, and LMN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Northwest, which are the combined region. we have had retired sometime last year, and it's taken a while for us to finally conclude the recruitment process. We have just about a week ago completed interviews for the filling of both those RC positions, and we are confident that we will be filling those positions in the next couple of days, maybe weeks, I'm not sure of the administrative processes there. But that is the position insofar as those key positions. Of course, we have also interviewed for the CDC human resource position, which became vacant more than a year ago. At this stage, we have not yet made a decision on the outcome of that of those interviews. We'll communicate in due course. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Minister. Honourable Members, I think it's now our time for that second question or comment.
To say that during a similar time, we also did fill the position of CFO in 2015. So even though it's not asked, I think it's a critical position as well.
Thank you. I'll just directly go to Honourable Members. Honourable Manapule, I can see you are raising your hands. Any member, Honourable Engelbrecht? I think for now we have the two members who want to ask a question. Yes, Honourable Manapule, you can
see. No, I'm not going to No, thank you, sir. I'd like to welcome the briefing, the progress that has been done to date. I noticed that there are indeed progress that have been made, and in some there are some hiccups and challenges that the minister has presented. Mine, Chair, I don't want to take all the questions. Other members will respond. I just want to focus on correctional service questions. Chair, the minister himself, when he presented that when he was deployed to this department, he found he was confronted with the Hollywood department. He managed to change the debt situation. But now again, at the same breath, he's creating another Hollywood actor. Because of he's aware that the commissioner is actually has retired. He's supposed to not be in his office as we speak, and in the 1st of August. They have not advertised. He says this will be advertised soon because it's a turnaround time. I want to believe the turnaround time of recruitment is 3 months. So the likelihood of creating another Hollywood is there. Because the minister was aware that it's coming to. Why didn't they prepare, start the process of recruitment by the time that the commissioner retire, knowing that there will be another commissioner will be incumbent to occupy this position? So that is one is really a problem to me. With regards to this. At the same time, going back to today's regional commissioner, the RCs, since 2015, we're in 2017. It's only now in the week of 2019 then the process was started in 2017 of recruitment. It's not yet been finalized. So the turnaround time of the department to fill the funded vacant post, is it 2 to 3 years? No longer 2-3 months, it's 3 years. So that is the impression that is created to me that, or otherwise, they don't need the strategic post. Why don't they just re-evaluate their organogram and get rid of these positions. We can't do that to have a vacant funded position for three years. For those are the them, because if this department needs this critical position, I'm raising this advantage. Fortunately, that this committee is a cluster of the committee which sit with security. Is what we are confronted with in the security committee, where there's a chronic vacant funded position in correctional services. Last week, two weeks back, we were taking parliament to the people where we were in Free State. We went to Port Clay. So three issues of vacant positions were raised. Correctional officers raised with the frustrations of vacant positions. So where is the level of the minister is not being addressed. So when it goes similarly to the managers now, who will be able to take this as a priority? Because if that thing is not addressed, it will also deal with the morale of the department itself. So those are the things, is the issue that I'm raising, the issue that to me I'm not happy with regards to the snail pace of addressing strategic positions, because it has to deal with the strategic matters. So thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable. But I think you are spot on. Honourable Minister, it is not that we're abusing you. We called you to come and respond on the executive, and again, you are raising other issues. We are using the opportunity that we need to prevent to us, because it's part of the issues that are challenging us. If we don't have a correct answers on those issues now, you can respond on in return. Honourable, thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Honourable Minister, in terms of your rationalisation of the magisterial districts, I'd just like to find out from you, how has the implementation of this affected the jurisdiction of the High Courts in the same area? And then linking to that is, what has happened to the pending and existing cases? Have they remained in the jurisdiction of the courts where the matter was first heard, or have they been moved? If you could just maybe explain that. And then if you could just tell me which are the physical areas where these courts have been implemented. Where are the areas in Gauteng and Northwest where these courts have been built? And then we're talking about the 12 courts, because you spoke about the 12 courts. If you could just tell us where they are. And then in terms of the appointments, are there any acting appointments that still need to be filled? If you could just give us that information. In terms of the ethics and the fraud and the corruption and the work that you're doing to limit this, and thank you for the detail that you've provided in terms of your cases, but how many officials have actually been dismissed on charges of fraud, corruption, or serious maladministration since the inception of your anti-corruption strategy? And then I just want to abuse this opportunity, Mr. Chair, when we were at our oversight visits, that there's a huge challenge with uniforms for our people in the correctional services. If maybe you could just take an opportunity, if you can, in terms of the actual wardens, their uniforms, and then, of course, the inmates, their uniforms as well, please. Thanks, Mr. Minister.
Thank you. Honourable Wana, you will be the last time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. First and foremost, Chairperson, let me appreciate the input from the Minister. I'm also concerned about the rationalization. What is the current situation? Because in my province, there was an issue that they're going to close the Umtata High Court and go to Grahamstown. And I don't know whether they're considering the distance or population in the release, or because it's very critical. I'm not saying we must stay in the apartheid, but if you can take that high court from Umtata, where servicing people from Bizana, which is 4 hours from Bizana to Umtata, What are you expecting going to Grahamstown? And this regionalization at the look of things is prioritizing the apartheid distances, because the apartheid system is still supportive indirect. If you can go to, you are going to close the high courts because you say it was a homeland. At the same time, what is the population around that? Secondly, there was an issue, Chairperson, of the occupational special dispensation. This department, I don't know, they didn't finish that, because that is an agreement from the bargaining, and it was within the agreement of the public service that the workers must have that special occupational dispensation, OSD. Secondly, Chairperson, at the look of things here, I've seen that there were investigations, but this report is silent about the conclusion and the manner how this were dealt about this investigation of plus minus 222 related to fraud. So, lastly, Chairperson, the Minister, how is the department is monitoring the issue of private correctional services in Mangaung, where they are contributing 43 million every month? And secondly, the people who are there, most of them are foreigners. How are you monitoring in terms of the permits and on and everything included there? Thanks very much.
Thanks, Honourable One. Of course, we are abusing we are using the time effectively that we have been given. We are using it effectively because the time that we have, we must use it. Honourable Minister, the issue of the private prisons, perhaps you give us more detail on it. I think we, of course, we'll do table an oversight report on this because we are on oversight. But I think we must use an advantage as they are seeing now that we are here, just to raise it so that they can maybe hear from your own view. Although we don't expect correct answers, spot on answers on that issue, because we're still going to recommend on it. But if we can at least be privy, given that information, what is happening with this private prisoners, because if you pay for 47 million per month, it's something else. It's not sitting well to us. Yeah, other questions, I think you have noted them. I think you can therefore answer on this one. Thank you.
Thank you. No, thank you, Chair, for the questions. The beauty of these questions is that they also assist us to zoom into certain areas in the course of our own executive oversight, so we really appreciate them. Maybe let me just start with this triple P model. It was introduced, I don't know, it was a decade ago or so. And it started with the two prisons, one in Mangaung and the other one in the Mpopo, the Bemba district, where it's falling, Kutama, Sintumule Kutama. Now, the model, as I understood it, was to, because of constraints on the part of government for given the huge cost of capital outlay that the state sometimes, because of fiscal constraints, find itself, was to allow private players to come into this space to provide the infrastructure. I think at the time the model was to hand over the entire operation as well to that private player. There's different models that are being punted currently, including one where the private player would provide the infrastructure, because they tend to be good and cost effective at delivering infrastructure timelessly, quickly, compared to government. But for government to then focus on the actual running of the service in the center, that's another model that's being put forward. I've actually requested that I be provided with a cost-benefit analysis, which does not only look at cost, but also looks at value that you derive. I mean, some of these centers are so well run that the quality of product in the end far outstrips the quality of product you are able to get in our public facilities. Although there has been some of our public facilities that have demonstrated that they could actually match that value. One of the challenges, for example, is certification of training programs. Most of these private partnerships ensure that amongst the standards they are able to maintain is the standard of training, which is a very critical catalyst for social reintegration at the end of a program for an inmate to be absorbed effectively back into society. So we're looking at all those issues to say training inmates and not certificating them properly is not adequate. And what lessons can we draw from how some of these private prisons, of course they have the privilege that they are never a subject of overcrowding, because in terms of their contracts, you cannot exceed 100%. So they will always have just the right number of inmates and not be burdened with the challenges that public facilities encounter, with the consequent challenges that come with overcrowding, which I will not burden you with. I'm sure you're quite familiar with those issues. So in short, to say that we're looking at those models from a point of cost-benefit, lessons learned, and in order to develop an ideal model that's affordable, sustainable. But the reality is that we need more bed space. The current correctional facilities, the 243, are designed to cater for about 120,000 inmates. We're currently sitting, give or take, at around 160. So we, and in some facilities, the overcrowding is even over 200%. In other words, 300% occupancy. And in terms of the Saldana judgment, which has set the minimum at 150% occupancy, which we have already achieved with POSMO, we are rolling that out to all the other provinces to say no facility should exceed that norm. Difficult as the challenge of rationalizing the numbers may be. So there's a number of issues to talk about there. The issue okay, let me go back to the top. The issue of Commissioner Modise and the advert. We could have advertised a month ago already, but we thought that before we even begin a hunt for a new commissioner, let's first better understand the lessons that we can draw from the 2 years that Mr. Modise has been with us. So we requested him to provide us a comprehensive exit report, or what did we call it? Handover report. He actually took special leave for an entire month to prepare it. This is somebody who has been in the system for 38 years. So we envisaged that the lessons that he drew from the 38 years that he's been with the system and have emerged through the ranks would assist us to better understand the needs of the organization, the challenges, and some of the nuances which, you know, somebody who does not hold that length of experience would have. And I met with him yesterday. He presented, I think, was it 5 huge Archlever files, which will take me some time to study. Looks like it's quite comprehensive. So I thought before we even begin the recruitment process, let's understand what the real needs of the of a huge organization like this are, so that when we begin to identify a suitable person to take over, we ourselves are appraised of what we should be looking for in the next incumbent for that position. It's a very strategic and important position. But nonetheless, we've committed ourselves that within the next week or two, we should be in a position to put out the advert. The issue of the amount of time it's taken to fill the other vacancies. Let me deal with the RC positions. The honorable member is correct to also refer to the fact of the need to revisit the structure. Part of the reason why especially the RC positions have taken us this long to fill was because there was an ongoing debate which has not yet been concluded as to whether corrections should be organized, continue to operate along the lines of 6 regions when we have 9 provinces in the country, or whether we need to rationalize or rather reorganize those regions and to realign them to the provincial system. The reason why we had 6 regions in the first place was in acknowledging that the provinces are not the same in terms of size, geographically, and in terms of population, including population of inmates in our correctional centers in each province. So it was because of that consideration that Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and Northwest were clubbed together under one region, as well as Free State and Northern Cape, another region. So the restructuring that has been ongoing for some time within the department has been also been delayed by the insistence from ourselves as the executive that before we even talk about a new structure for the department, let's also first deal with the issue of business process re-engineering. What is this structure going to do exactly? So that we don't reorganize the structure and only find that the structure is not responsive to the needs of occasioned by the mandate. So a clear articulation of how the mandate as reconceptualized can best be addressed is the discourse that's currently taking. In other words, which is the chicken and which is the egg, to use simple English. But we eventually decided that we can't hold back some of these positions, as the member correctly said, because of the critical significance. So that's how we finally concluded. It's taken us a bit long, going to backwards and forwards, consultations, etc. But that was the reason for the delay. The issue of OSD at corrections, we found it as a legacy issue dating back to 2009. I gave an instruction that the matter had to be resolved within the shortest space of time, because my argument was that if there is one resource that in our cluster is the most central, is our own people. Employee wellness includes happy faces every morning when our officials go to work, and this has been a sore point for many years. The OSD has since been resolved. It's been rolled out. There's a few teething issues about it, but in large measure. Unfortunately, it's come at a time when we were facing austerity, so it's not been easy talking to our CFO around this. But we're pleased that we have started rolling it out, and there's significant progress that's been recorded in that regard. The issue of Mtata, I honestly don't know where it comes from. The Mtata High Court is there to stay. There has been concentration, I think, of appeals in Grahamstown or something. But insofar as ordinary litigation is concerned, the Mtata High Court remains a fully fledged operational court. It needs renovation. There are issues of cost cutting when it comes to infrastructure budget. Unfortunately, that's affecting all our maintenance plans throughout the country. The district court in Mtata, which has been the subject of many interventions, we finally decided we need to build a completely new court at another site in order to deliver a decent service to the people of Mtata. That process is underway in terms of planning, finalization, etc. But in the meantime, we're attending to some of the few numerous maintenance issues that have been raised. I visited Mtata a couple of times myself over the last 2 years. The issue of why do I have convictions here? Dismissals. I thought in relation to justice, the statistics is given in details in the circular. But insofar as corrections is concerned, 2016 we had a total of 37 cases, 19 dismissals, 10 final written warnings, 7 written warnings, and 1 verbal warning. And 2017, we've had a total, I'm sure these figures can then be added as supplementary to the circular. 43 guilty findings, 43. Yes, was it 43 that we found guilty? No, actually, let me rather not go into the details of the statistics and rather offer to have them provided in writing. The issue of vacancies in at corrections generally, there have been challenges with regard to absorption capacity within corrections. Whilst we solely need the warm bodies to match the ratio between offender or inmate and official, for security reasons, for implementing programs, especially rehabilitation and training, etc., we have had challenges of absorption capacity, which was a structural problem. An example of this was that we had a college that provides 3 months of theoretical training, but it was running one session a year. And we said, but what about the other months? What do the trainers sit around and do?
and what does the facility serve during that fallow period? If you are in farming, I'm sure those seasons when there is no planting or harvesting or anything. And we said we needed to have more sessions in a year. Minimum of two, if three is possible, so be it. And this has resulted in us increasing the capacity, the absorption capacity. But then, of course, now we have a situation where, which has caught up with us, seasonal fall, amongst others, have meant that entry-level positions have been frozen, not because they are not needed, but because of supporting the austerity measures. The exact figures that have been filled, etc., those can be provided in writing if colleagues wish. The transfer of cases to the new high courts, as opposed to those cases being concluded where they are, the policy for the new high courts is generally to take up new cases only and to let litigants conclude their existing cases in those divisions of the High Court where they are already served in the interest of justice, because you don't want to create undue. There's been issues around the distribution of work in Limpopo High Court vis-a-vis the local seats. I'm meeting with, I'm going to Limpopo on Friday, Saturday for some projects, and I intend to meet the judge president there to discuss some of this of these issues. The uniforms issue, unfortunately, I didn't bring the figures, but we had sought to provide details of the interventions we've made to fast-track the provision of uniform to both inmates and officials in those centres. There has been some progress, which I was meant to provide at the visit of the NCOP to Free State. We can make that information available. I think this is about the information about where exactly these 54 courts that we built over the last 23 years are located is information that a list can be provided in writing in terms of location, etc., and the jurisdiction of each of those courts. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thanks, Honourable Minister. In note that there are some detailed information that you are still going to submit to us. You still have something before we wrap up, Honourable Juana?
Chairperson, no, it's not a question. I want to make a comment. Can I do that? I appeal to the department to try and revisit this issue of these private correctional services. As much as the terms of reference when they were designing it itself as if it's perfect, but the benefit of the people are in America, but we are talking of radical transformation. And in that radical transformation, the beneficiation should be the South Africans. It's very ridiculous. It's a contradictory type of a program. I cannot understand. I'm just making that comment, and they must try and revisit who are these beneficiaries, and how long is this in this list? Because if you're talking about the building, we've got our own department, Public Works. If somebody outside can come and build, what is the difficult when you make your own building within in-house? Because we've got that department which is specific for the building. It's a comment, Chairperson, and it's very pathetic. According to the programs that are articulated by radical economical changes. Thank you.
Manapule, follow then on Minister.
No, thank you, Chair. Just want to thank the Minister for the response. But mine is with regards to, I hear the Minister saying they were looking at restructure the department. But it took them 2 years to do that. The response is saying that they'll finalize this thing soon of the RCs. Soon can be in 2020. Just like it took them 2 years to start the process of recruitment. Thank you, Chair.
Minister, let's do this. If there is no detailed information, please, we are given that opportunity to submit it in black and white. But again, on the issue, perhaps I was an additional clarifying question on the issue of your mediation functions. Which areas are this court established? I think it will also follow with the written reply, that one. Can we say the one that Honorable Manapula just raised now so that we time is after us, really? Just that one that Honorable Manapula raised, just to be cleared. Then the issue of the private, the PPP prisons and so on, will detail on it politically going forward, because of course there is serious concern around that one. Honorable Minister, thank you.
Chair, maybe just a small comment on the PPPs at this stage to say, of course, we will come in a more fuller manner back to the what you call. But let me indicate that one of the proposals that Kutama, for example, recently made to me was expanding the facility, increasing bed space, which would have meant expanding the contractual arrangement. Are frozen that matter until we have dealt not only with the concept itself, but also with some of the human resource challenges that there have been issues there. So it's not as if it's all been rosy. So we've been engaging with the employee representatives there and around some of the issues. But generally, the whole issue of insourcing versus outsourcing as a policy issue in the department is one area that I am looking at us visiting in earnest in terms of looking at cost benefit. Do we have to outsource certain things? Why are we not rather doing them in-house, and what are the cost implications, etc.? But on the RC issue, we have concluded the interviews. We have made, as the executive, appointments. What remains is the operationalization, the administrative part, which, like I said, within days, certainly if it's weeks, it shouldn't take, I don't know, 2 weeks or so before we're able to make announcements. So it's not going to take another long period. Thank you.
No. I think we take note of the response we will be awaiting. But of course we are taught, especially the honourable member who asked this question, we are from another camp or from another era where in we were taught very soon will be more than 10 years to come. So we need to be specific. Thank you. I think I withdrawn it. It won't be to 10 years, it will be 2 weeks. But yes, can we, therefore, in that note, of course, appreciate the response from the department for them offering us this time. Of course, as part of our work, we of course believe that we will carry on in the note that we started with, and with this progress that you are giving us, of course it will assist the country and the society at larger to say whatever we promise to them in our species, we are committing on them. We will be reporting on it, and of course we will also raise the challenges faced by the department in implementing those undertakings. In that note, can I therefore request the House to adjourn? Thank you.
You got one more item. You can recuse the minister.
Yeah, no.
But the members will stay there for item.
Sorry. Thank you. I do acknowledge that.
So withdraw the adjournment. Withdraw the adjournment.
Can we therefore?
Withdraw the adjournment.
Hey, this members. Honourable.